Welcome to the Reader's Roundtable Podcast with Jessica Trotter, Mari Garza, and Cheryl Lindemann.
Welcome back to Reader's Roundtable. I'm Jessica Trotter, and I'm here with fellow cattle selector and podcaster, Cheryl Lindemann.
Hello.
Hey, Cheryl. We're missing Mari Garza because she's going to follow us with a segment that's being produced with our Hazlitt branch, Teen Advisory Group, as part of Teentober. If you're not familiar with Teentober, it's a new thing that ALA is doing. It's sort of combining Teen Tech Week and Teen Read Weeks to celebrate teens and the things that they are interested in for a month.
Very cool.
So, and that's going to be fun for you to hear. But Cheryl and I, we thought we'd just sort of talk books and what we're dealing with right now. It is a huge release period for new books right now.
Absolutely.
And we're just trying to keep on top of it all. How's that working for you, Cheryl?
Oh, boy. It has been quite the month, hasn't it?
Yes, it has.
Boxes upon boxes of new books.
Yep. I mean, everything you'd expect. So if you are a Patterson fan, you know that something comes out pretty much every other week. 19th Christmas is coming. It should be getting around to everybody now. And we're taping this middle of October, so the new Grisham book will be out and about within the next week or so. But you know, making decisions about what to even talk about on the podcast has been a little odd because there's just so many things.
So much we could cover.
Do you want to just, how did you narrow down? What did you decide on?
Sure. You know, I just narrowed, it really was tricky to narrow things down this time. And so I decided just to pick some of the books that have risen to the top. Mm-hmm. There's just so much reading. Sure. There's so much available. We can only choose enough things to fill our segment time here. So I chose the things that, again, rose to the top. And interestingly, they seem to have a theme for me this time.
Huh.
They seem to be books that sort of stared unflinchingly at something.
Okay.
So either fiction or nonfiction. Mm-hmm. My choices did that. But did this with the tenderness and a poignancy that came through as well.
Okay.
And so that theme sort of arose after I looked at these titles. So the first one to start out with is called Late Migrations. And this was an Indie Next pick. And it is Late Migrations, A Natural History of Love and Loss by Margaret Renkel. And this title is written by Margaret Renkel, who is a New York Times opinion writer. And it's actually beautifully illustrated by her brother. He did all the artwork for the book. And what it does is it alternates between its essays, very poetic essays, and they alternate between descriptions of the flora and fauna around her home and really vivid depictions of her childhood, and in particular, her lineage. So it goes not just from her childhood memories, but back to stories that her grandparents told her about their life. Mm-hmm. She grew up in Lower Alabama, and she now lives in the Nashville area. So it alternates between those. And the theme of the book really is about nature, about loss, about family. And her writing is just stunning. And a little piece of her writing I took from there, she describes about how the sound of a blue jay can bring back childhood memories instantly, brings mm-hmm. back the land around her home and her grandparents' home. And a quote from the book is, "I am a creature of piney woods and folded terrain, of bird song and running creeks and 1,000 shades of green." Mm-hmm. So that's just a little snippet, a little mm-hmm. taste of this book, which is really gorgeous.
Okay, well, you are way over influencing my reading to be read list lately, so it's becoming a little bit of a problem here. I'm the fiction selection. I'm reading an awful lot of nonfiction, and I have an awful lot of it sitting in a pile. So thank you. My first one, you know, connects on the level of the poetry of the writing, though it's... My first pick is How We Fight for Our Lives. It's just a memoir by Saeed Jones that just came out within the last couple of weeks. He came to my attention. He's probably on social media. He's at the Ferocity on Twitter and Instagram. Just someone that is very fascinating to follow on social media. He used to be a BuzzFeed editor, a high-level BuzzFeed editor. But he's a very noted poet. His first collection of poetry was called Prelude to Bruges, and he won the Penn Joyce Award for poetry, the Stonewall Book Award, Lambda Publishing Triangle Awards, and he was a finalist for the National Book Circle Critic Award with that particular title. And then this book is really, it's sort of a memoir of his coming out, but it's also, it's sort of a, what he kind of describes it as, what made me like this memoir. It sort of shows what his early ideas of what being gay and being black and male meant. It's one of those books that it's a beautiful read, but you also, if you step back and think about it, you wonder how he survived. Mm-hmm. There's a level of poverty, there's a level of not enough self-care. Mm-hmm. Because his views on what he was were shaped by some very distinct things. He found a picture of a friend of his mother's when he was a early teen, and you know, he asked her about who the person was, and basically all she would say was, he was a friend, we went to Jackson together, he died not long after that, after he found out he had AIDS, he killed himself. Mm. So that's one view, mm-hmm. black man who was gay. Another one was Matthew Shepard's murder, mm-hmm. and another one was James Byrd's murder, which are both hate crime, so that gay men, black men, this is what he's understanding his worth as, in a mm-hmm. sense. It's a really beautiful book. He makes it through. He's a fabulous writer. He's becoming, in a way, a cultural icon that I really enjoy hearing what he's talking about on social media. This is a person who's, his quotes and regular conversations on Twitter are with Roxane Gay and Jacqueline Woodson. So, there are people, it's a fascinating read. It's a very quick read. And his writing, it's clear that he is a poet. That's mm-hmm. Especially when you're talking about these sparse and painful memories. It's also a bit about mothers and sons. He was raised by a single mother, and there's the tension of his mother was actually Buddhist and he was raised Buddhist, but his grandmother was more evangelical, and that, of course, did not mix. Mm-hmm. Him being gay did not mix with that. So it's just a fascinating read. That I think everybody should pick up. Mm-hmm. And that's How We Fight for Our Lives by Saeed Jones.
Excellent. Okay, I wanted to go back a little bit to Late Migrations, but not to the book itself, but actually to the publisher of Late Migrations. I wanted to go back to that because it's published by Milkweed Editions. And interestingly, this is a not-for-profit publisher founded in 1980. It's an independent publisher, and often a lot of the books are underwritten by community members, by donors.
Which is really neat.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
It really is. I didn't either. They're located in Minneapolis, and they actually have a bookstore that looks like road trip worthy, definitely, that goes along with their company. They only publish about 18 to 20 books a year, and they have a really unique actual mission, which is to identify, nurture, and publish transformative literature and build an engaged community around it. Mm-hmm. One of the books that they published that I know at Capillary District Libraries is still going very strong, an excellent book called Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer. Mm-hmm. They also published the book that I talked about last month on the podcast, Ada Limon. Several of her books, actually. So it's just a really interesting publishing company to check out and to think about that type of mission and the work that they put out.
Yeah, gift book ideas. I mean, when you think about it, that's definitely a nice...
And the books are beautiful. Like this book here, The Late Migrations, just it's mm-hmm. heavy, it's gorgeously illustrated, it's really mm-hmm. well put together, it's just really thoughtful.
One of the books... I think I've mentioned before that I'm working on a project where I'm really kind of going through Michigan titles. Mm-hmm. And I'm always fascinated by what comes out of Wayne State's mm-hmm. Michigan collection. And one of the books that I want to talk about today is What It May Feel Like to Hope mm. by Doreen O'Brien. It's a book of short stories. They're kind of a whole variety of characters and settings, and kind of different formats in terms of the short stories, but it's just so, everything's so well crafted. And they're, they're quirky, they're sometimes heartbreaking, they're just really interesting stories kind of around the idea of hope. And in whether it's that powerful will get you through, whether it's the naive or more damning kind of you're just depending on this without putting in the work type of thing. It's looking at it from all kinds of angles. And there's a story about, it's the title is Eight Blind Dates Later, and it's just sort of a going through of a bunch of blind dates. And it ends in an interesting place that you recognize when you get there. There's this kind of back and forth in another story between a mortician and an idealistic novelist about the nature of death that kind of goes back. And it's that was kind of a touching, sad one. There's one about an aspiring author who's trying to impress Tom Hanks with zombies.
Oh, my.
A zombie story. If I didn't make it clear, this is a Detroit area writer. Okay. There's one which deals with like a tarot reader. You kind of go back and forth whether the person's is earnest or not, but it's basically a tarot reader telling the future of Detroit, and in a way, almost feels like creating the future of Detroit. It's very interesting sets of stories, and the characters are really neat. So it's one I think anybody should pick up, especially with the Michigan collection.
Yeah, the Michigan
so that
collection.
One's What It Might Feel Like to Hope by Doreen O'Brien.
Okay, that sounds great. Mm-hmm. Going back to some of the picks that I brought from this month's reading, one of the next ones is Goodbye Vitamin is the title. Goodbye Vitamin, a novel by Rachel Kong. And again, it goes back to that unflinching sort of theme. It's a book that is about something. I've told people I was reading it, and a lot of people said, oh, it sounds really somber. Oh, because the premise is that the main character, Ruth, is going back. She's 30 years old. She has come off a really difficult breakup, and her job is just sort of stuck in neutral. And she goes home to L.A. to her family. And she comes home at a time that's really difficult because her father, who is a history professor, really renowned, really well-loved, is suffering from memory problems that have gotten so serious that he's had to take a leave of absence from his job. Of course, hints at Alzheimer's. And he's quite young to be experiencing this. And it's thrown her small family into turmoil. And so, again, it's a really dark theme, and it is a dark topic. However, the way that the character pulls you into the story, it's just immediate, right when you pick up the book. She almost has like a stream of consciousness style writing. There's a lot of humor. There's a lot of just noticing the environment, noticing the grocery store, noticing people around her. And the writing style is so unique in that it pulls you right in. And through this book, through this coverage of this very difficult topic of her coming to terms and her family coming to terms with what this means for their family, they all pull together with this funny poignancy, and it was a fantastic read. And really, there's a transformation for everyone in the family through the book. Not a book with a tidy ending, and. But at the same time, points at family as in its imperfections as being sort of a beautiful place to be, I guess. The other one that I have also touches on this idea of the imperfection of family life. This next one is called Small Animals, Parenting in the Age of Fear. It's by Kim Brooks. A nonfiction book came out last year, and I would say it could be... a difficult read in that it starts out with a very difficult story, a true story, about the author leaving her child in the car for a few minutes while she went into Target. She goes into why she did that, why it was a mistake, but the repercussions follow for years. Someone saw her child, reported her to the police, and it becomes a very large legal situation for her family, but also causes her to have deep reflection about, again, what she did, but then also what kind of a parenting culture we live in right now, what parenting culture she is immersed in, and what the roots of that are, why, how, when. And it's probably one of the most thought-provoking books I've read in years as a parent of a child, of a young child. And I think with social media right now, we are seeing so many more stories about danger. We're seeing more than we've seen before. And how much danger are we really in? So I think that's what this focuses on. And so I believe this would be a really good book for really any parent to read. It pushes you, it makes you think deeply about your role as a parent, and the role of fear in our parenting, and also a really good book for a group discussion.
Yeah, it sounds like it, mm-hmm. very much. Yeah. And I told you before this, for my next picks, I really couldn't decide which of kind of my off-the-wall science fiction fantasy titles I really wanted to talk about. So I'm actually going to talk about both of them.
Okay.
I told her the choice was either The Library in Hell or The Snarky Swordswoman and Necromancer. It's a pair of ladies. And so I'll start with The Library in Hell. So this is The Library of the Unwritten is a new book. It's a library in hell, so clearly the librarians in the room are going to be vaguely interested. But this one was, the premise is that unwritten books, those ideas in the back of authors' heads that never get down on a page, have dangerous potential. There's a lot of power to those ideas. And evidently, in this particular book, that power is so powerful that people want it corralled, and there is a unique library where they are all kept. It's not actually in hell. It's just sort of hell adjacent. Satan is not in charge. And the librarian is quite willing to say that to his face. But it's one of those things where you have a librarian who is in charge of something fairly magical. These ideas take shape on occasion. Sometimes they try to escape. You'll see a character from a book fully formed and wanting to get back and talk to the, you know, if there's an author there that they can convince to get you down and print, they're trying to get back to the real world to do that. And it's a quirky, interesting story. The librarians are caring and determined. So if somebody is going to escape, they're going to get brought back. In this opening scenes, a character does escape. They're on a mission and manages actually to get back to the real world. And in the process of trying to corral that particular character, they run into an angel who's on a mission of a different kind, who thinks they're looking for the same thing, and it's not really true. But then they realize what the angel is looking for, which is some magical item that belongs to the devil. Then they think, ooh, that can't be in their hands and it can't be in his hands, so we need to find it first. And it becomes this grand, strange story. If you are a fan of Genevieve Cogman or Natasha Pulley, Terry Pratchett and Gaiman's Good Omens, this is one of those books I would certainly try, and it's a series starter. And the other one is actually crazier than that. You can go and look at other people's versions of what they call it. They're not all, I would say, safe for work. It's just a crazy book. It shouldn't work. This is a book called Gideon the Ninth by Tamsin Muir. It is about a really snarky swordswoman and the necromancer that she serves and hates. And then there's a bunch of, because it includes a necromancer, there's a bunch of skeletons being reanimated all over the place. It drops you right in to Gideon, this swordswoman. It's her 87th escape attempt from this house that she's working for. She's fed up with her life. She figures she's sick of working for this lady. She's pretty much fine with whatever happens. She just wants out. It's a great plan. It should have worked. She gets caught up by something totally out of her control, and unfortunately, her boss, Harrowhawk, finds out, makes her a deal she can't refuse. Harrowhawk has been called in by the Emperor, so all of the house leaders are being called into the Emperor's planet for something. They are allowed to bring one bodyguard, and unfortunately, Gideon is her best best warrior, best swordsman. So she is going to be the one that's going. It really is off the wall crazy. It is part sci-fi, part fantasy. It becomes, in a weird way, a manor house mystery. It's darkly funny. It's kind of horrifying at moments, but it was really wonderful. And if you go looking for different librarians and authors and readers' takes on this, it's just everybody is saying this should not work. But it's fabulous. It has a fabulous cover. Again, it should not work, but the cover of this book is basically a woman almost dressed as painted up like a skeleton, wearing aviator glasses. I can't tell you what time period this fits in, but she's wearing aviator glasses, and she puts them on just as, you know, the fight scene is about to begin, because that's just the kind of girl she is. It's crazy. And I cannot wait until the next book is out. First one is Gideon the Ninth, and next year there will be Harrowhawk of the Ninth will be coming out as well. So, right. Those are my fun ones for this time.
Excellent, excellent. I will end my segment of this with, I always like to give a shout out to some of the really fun books that we've discovered at home with my daughter. And the one that I really enjoyed with her this month is Aquacorn Cove by Katie O'Neill. And Katie O'Neill. Yes, the Tea Dragon Society.
I love those books.
Yes, and the newest one, the Tea Dragon Festival, I have in hand right now. That one is brand new release. We have that at Capitolary District Libraries. Aquacorn Cove is a little bit of an offshoot, but the other two go together. And these are so captivating, really, for all ages. My daughter is 7. She loves them. She loves the bit of fantasy.
I'm not 7, and I love them.
Yes, and I love them as an adult. And I'm actually not a big fan of fantasy.
Right.
So for me to love them is saying a lot. In particular, Aquacorn Cove, it actually fits with my theme of poignant and tender, but unflinching, because there is an undercurrent of something really serious going on in this book, which is the destruction of coral reefs. Mm-hmm. And that figures into the story, and there's a bit in the back for children or adults or any person who enjoys this book about the real destruction of coral reefs. Mm-hmm. So these are gorgeous. They're we have them in our juvenile graphic novel sections of our libraries, but they're really excellent for all ages.
Who's the publisher on those?
The publisher, I think that we've covered up the sticker on that. Oni Press.
Oh, okay. Those are Oni. All right.
Oni Press. Okay, so they're just fantastic. They're colorful. They're gorgeous. The Tea Dragon books, the dragons actually are named after varieties of tea. So there's green tea, and there's chamomile, and they're beautiful, very visually appealing. But the stories are excellent too. They're very inclusive. They're lovely, truly lovely books. What I have reading next is another piece of fiction. So I think that Jessica and I are really influencing each other, because I am reading more fiction now, which isn't always what I usually go to. I am reading Rules for Visiting, a novel by Jessica Frances Kane. And this is also, it was an Indie Next pick for this year. And I'm ready to dive right back into that one.
I'm a little torn. I came out of another book that I think I'm going to talk about next month, so I'm not going to do it here, with a bit of a book hangover, so I'm kind of trying to figure out where to go next. It was really good, and I will tell you more about it later.
Oh, okay.
I've briefly mentioned it before, but it's... I've got a lot of Michigan stuff I've just got to read, so that's probably where I'm headed next. But I also have... I'm not actually sure where I'm going to go next. I've got some picture books that I really want to get, just sort of shoot through.
Yeah. Been some wonderful picture books. Again, like we said in the beginning, this is a really big time for publishing.
There's so much coming out right now.
Yeah, there's so many releases. And so the stacks by the bed of books are growing and growing by the day. And the to-read lists and the end-of-year lists are going to be coming out soon.
Yeah.
Award lists have come out. So... for readers, this is a great time.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right.
Thank you for joining us, and stay tuned for Maddie's segment with the Hazlitt Teen Advisory Group.
Yes, thank you.
Hello, everyone. This is Marisela Garza from Capital Area District Libraries. Welcome back to Readers Roundtable. I am here today with two seniors from Hazlitt High School. Would you please introduce yourselves?
I'm Anna Parcells. I'm a senior.
And I'm Maddie Marino, and I'm a senior at Hazlitt as well.
Okay, great. Well, welcome. We're so glad that you're willing to talk to us about books and other things here today. So I'm here on a Friday night. They've just had one of their parties for their Teen Advisory Board, which is a fairly new group. Could you talk a little bit about your new group that was formed and how you got it started, and maybe, you know, what some of your hopes and dreams and goals, if you were just anything about the group?
Yeah, sure. So,
and say who you are.
Okay, yeah. So this is Maddie. We started our Kiwanis Advisor in Key Club, a community service organization at the school that we're both a part of. He contacted us and he was like, "Hey, the library, our Cattle Library, is starting a teen advisory board. Are either of you interested?" And so, of course, we both were. So we emailed Anne. And then she asked us to find more people who we think would be interested or help benefit the library. So we did that. And now we've had a couple meetings and we're working on basically like expanding, like more relating to like the youth and stuff. So we get them more involved in the community.
So who is your target age? Is it tweens and above, like 7th, 8th grade, or mostly high school?
Yeah, for most part, both through middle school and high school. 13, 12, above.
Okay, great. Yeah. So everyone's welcome. You don't have to live in Hazlitt to come. So if you're listening to us out there, teens, come on down. Check the website for information on parties and future book things. So one of the things that we usually do on this podcast is just talk about books. Sometimes they're new books, sometimes they're old books. But I thought I would start with, do you have a favorite title that in some way stuck with you or you found really notable? And it could be something you read recently or maybe back in, you know, sixth grade or something along those lines.
Sure. I'd say for me, like, it's kind of a cliche, but like the whole Harry Potter series for me is really a favorite. I have like the whole, I own the whole thing and I reread it on a pretty regular basis, I would say.
Okay.
I just really love the characters and just like the world that they live in is so great.
Yeah, me too. Harry Potter is just always just like a classic you can go to, because like I can never pick like a favorite anything. So Harry Potter is just always like a staple. Like if I had to pick one thing, it would just be Harry Potter because it's just so great.
Okay.
Yeah, and it keeps going. It's so, the series is so long that like there's always something new and there's always just something different you can find every time you read it. Yeah. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I've got to say Harry Potter is a favorite too, although I confess I did not read the whole series.
Oh my gosh.
I really enjoy like every so often they're putting out a new edition. I mean, now they're going through all the illustrated editions.
Yeah, like their Curse of Child and all the new movies about
it. Exactly.
So
yeah, yeah. That's the other thing, is I don't see any of those movies. I only want the book to live in my head. So, okay. Good. Well, I would have to say this isn't a kid's book per se, but I would imagine that maybe you've read Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen.
Yeah, we read that.
Yeah. Yes.
And I remember the very first time I read that and I was like, oh my gosh, it just blew me away. I don't know why, because it was very difficult to read. I mean, it was written in a very different style of English. So, but I was just really, really blown away by the title. And every few years I read it again.
Yeah. It's definitely a great read. Like being like a high schooler reading it, I'm just like, wait, how do I even understand her writing? But once I got the hang of that, it was really interesting. And I was like, wow, this is like so cliche. Like low girl and high class guy.
Right?
Then I'm like, wait, that invented the cliche.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was so great.
Exactly. Funny. Okay, so part of my work at Capital Area District Libraries is to develop the collection for children and for teens. So I end up having to follow a lot of like the bestseller lists, New York Times, USA Today. I'm always checking them and then checking our hold list to see how they are squaring. Does everybody know about them? So I'm kind of curious. You two, do you follow any specific authors that might be considered the bestseller types? And I'm thinking of like, you know, the Rick Riordans, the Angie Thomas, Neil Schusterman. Anyone like that?
Yeah, Neil Schusterman for me. I really like the Scythe series.
Okay.
I just read the second book, Thunderhead, last year, and I really enjoyed it. So I'm waiting for the third one to come out.
Yeah, it's coming out soon.
Yeah, there's kind of a cliffhanger at the end, so I want to read the next one.
Okay,
yeah, I read the Rick Riordan, like Percy Jackson stuff, when I was like either elementary, middle school or something, but I loved them. Like, I like now, like whenever we do Greek mythology later on, I'm like, ooh, I know that because I read the Percy Jackson series. I haven't gotten into any of his newer stuff, but I'm sure it's just as good.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm always amazed. Like, they're almost always checked out and they are repeatedly purchased over and over again because they get worn out. So, okay. All right. Well, I was going to ask you, in general, what kind of things appeal to you in a book? Is it more the characters? Do you like fantasy? And I thought I would do like maybe a thumbs up or a thumbs down. So just think of yourself as a reader, as a teen reader, as a reader in general. Are you more of a romance person? Thumbs up, thumbs down. Okay, we've got some teen readers who like the romance genre. How about fantasy? All right, I got another thumbs up. Okay. Do you enjoy reading historical fiction?
I mean, like, I liked Pride and Prejudice. Like, I read it through school. I don't think I would ever maybe go out of my way to read one. But,
I don't know. I feel like it depends on how relatable it is like how much I can relate to the characters.
Okay.
Because like when we were reading 1985, that was also kind of like
1984.
Yeah. That's okay.
1984. Yeah, when we were reading that, like, it was like an interesting read, but it wasn't like, I don't know, something I would pick up myself. So
sure. Yeah, sure. Okay. All right. Yeah, I really like historical fiction. Mostly, I mean, you have to really like take it and hope that the author has done their research, and because I like to learn about history, and if they can put it within the context of a happy story, or maybe not a happy story, but something that will help me to remember the history. That's part of why I like it. So how about graphic novels? Do you guys like to read graphic novels?
As a kid, I did, but like
not anymore.
So kind of a thumbs down.
Yeah.
Okay. I really like middle grade graphic novels, I think. Yeah, I especially like the artsy ones. And how about nonfiction? Do you find that you read nonfiction much, either in your personal reading or for school?
No. I really don't.
Okay.
Yeah, we never
fiction
read it in school. Yeah, I definitely like a different reality, like something like that's like different from mine. Like it's like a whole new like world, but like I can still like see myself as in the character's eyes and like relate to some of her problems, but on like a different level.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that. I feel like I align more with like realistic fiction and also fantasy, like pretty much like either is good.
I like science fiction the best.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I have to ask, where do you find your books? I mean, I'm hoping you find some of them here at Cattle, but do you have a school library that you also use? Or?
Oh, yeah. We love our library at school. Our librarian is the best.
Awesome.
We love her.
Great. Great, great.
Yeah, she just left and I'm really sad.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, she moved back to her hometown. I mean, I work at the cafe in Schuler Books, so I have access to all of the like early edition reader's copies.
Oh,
so
nice.
I go in there a lot to get books.
Great.
Yeah, and I always take the ones that she really likes.
Okay. So for listeners out there, we have this thing that we call ARCs, and they're called advanced reader copies, and publishers send them out to libraries and bookstores in the hope that some of our readers will read them and create buzz about them. So we love those because not only are they free, but you kind of get to read something before anybody else gets to read it. So okay. Well, does anyone want to share what they're reading now?
Sure. I'm actually rereading one of my advanced reader's copies. It's called The Key to Happily Ever After by Tiff Marcello, I believe her name is. It follows like the three sisters who run a wedding planning business, and it's just really interesting, like their love lives and how it's like all connected through their business, and I enjoy it.
I'm reading The Handmaiden's Tale right now for AP English. I've just started it, so I'm not too far in, but it's so interesting. Like, I just love it. Yeah. Like, it's such like a different reality. But then you think about how it could become our own reality if things go wrong enough.
Right.
But yeah, it's really interesting. I'm really excited to finish it.
Okay. Yeah, I was one of my first, like back way back, because it was published a while ago, my first book group discussion club things. And I was like, wow, this is, I had never read anything quite like that. And that's really neat. Okay, so I'm reading currently Frankly in Love by David Yoon. This is, if anyone follows YA Lit, he is the husband of Nicola Yoon, who wrote...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I was thinking, I'm just like, I remember Nicola Yoon. She's really great.
Yeah, and this was a really good book. I actually already finished it, but I really was very... intrigued by the concept. I mean, it's about a Korean-American teen and his circle of friends, and not just like there's the whole drama of getting into college and SAT scores and all that, but
I relate to that.
Yeah.
I bet that's understandable.
I bet you do. There was definitely like an undercurrent of like thinking about what is it like when your parents exhibit behaviors or have attitudes, worldviews that you don't agree with, and how do you...
That is very real.
How do you approach that respectfully because of your parents, but, and, you know, maybe try to come up with a way to distance yourself. So that I really, really, really enjoyed. And I have to say the first 100 pages were just hilarious. Really, really funny.
Yeah, I love when books can like use humor, like, and like, it's like subtle, but like you notice it and then you're just like, oh my gosh, that is so funny.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's just like snuck in there.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Okay. Well, I really want to thank you very much for your time. I hope you have a great school year and a great experience with TAB.
Thank you.
Thanks for participating with Capillary District Libraries today with the Readers Roundtable Podcast.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Okay.